I think David would tell the story that Bathsheba was a wine mom, but
Server has now started doing this thing where he waits for one of us to say something incredibly stupid to start recording, because he's like, all right, here's where the cold open may lie.
There's a pattern when it comes to depicting Bathsheba, and it's boobs.
Right. Boobs.
That's why I asked if she was a wine mom.
Here's religious art experts. It's just religious.
So, like, the story that is in the Bible is essentially she's cleaning herself after her period. Mm-hmm. Dudes draw paintings of this as, oh, she's posing with her tits out. These are not the same thing.
No. I'm seeing this as, like, she's really scrubbing the gooch. She's really getting in there.
The story is about what a pervert David is, not about, well, he couldn't have resisted. It's about, it should have been easy to resist.
Oh, boy. This is not how I thought the first show of 2024 reversed, would go, and that's on me.
Reversed it would be amazing. It'd be like, Queen Bathsheba beheld David going at it, just scrubbing his ass. She's like, that's beheld my man.
David's gooch. Gleaming from the top of the
he's got some sort of horrible mega abrasive sponge they pulled out of the Mediterranean.
So in the spring, when kings go to war, there was King David on the roof, butt sunning.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Just working a stick. Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Wait.
Wow.
No, sorry, I got sidetracked trying to imagine the physics of how that would work.
Like a dipstick?
Yeah, what?
No, I meant like the cleaning stick. Like the classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh?
Like a Roto-Rooter?
Like like the Romans would
I think this is for external use only, Jason.
Yeah, external use. I'm not saying David's sitting there railing himself with like
I don't know what else you mean by stick.
I think he's talking about a taint scrub.
Yeah.
Wait,
like,
okay. You don't just what do you, huh?
Because they didn't have toilet paper, I guess.
All right.
Yeah, they didn't have toilet paper,
here
so sponge, gulp, on, a, sponge on a rod.
What do Got normal it. People scrub their taints with? She asked, expecting an answer.
Coors Light! Ice cold Coors Light!
Now my mountains are blue.
My valleys are blue, too!
And refreshing.
Whoa.
Talk about it. Chill!
I've got a chill.
Please do not use Coors Light for cleaning your perineum.
Coors Light is for internal use only. I think pound for pound, minute for minute, 2024 is our best year yet.
Oh my god.
Just keep this going for an entire
pound
year.
Pound for pound.
That man ran down to his like counselors, his aides, and he's like, hey, so I have an important policy decision I need to make. Yeah, what is it, King David? There's this naked chick, yeah? And she's on a roof. Yeah, we gotta make this happen.
She's not even on a roof. The story doesn't say she's on a roof. Like, he might have been peering through her window at herself cleaning her discharge away.
He makes it like a priority of the state.
To me, my X-Men, I need you to go retrieve. I have something more important going on. I have something more important going on than the fucking war we are fighting right now. Nightcrawler, go in there. You're the only one who can do it.
It's weird. I would break down in traffic for any of you and have for some of you, but can I just ask that we never use the word discharge again?
I'm just quoting the Bible.
Thank you, Holly. Thank
yeah, you. No, you're right. I'm a heretic like that.
Just poor Nightcrawler. Bam.
The teen version didn't say discharge. That could be part of the problem.
Yeah, the NIT Innovateen Bible is probably like ooiness or something.
The stickitude. Now I'm upset.
The teenage dirtbag Bible is like stank on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the
teenage
like,
King
the,
James
the, when they do
vibe.
Like the teen when they do the teen Bible for boys, there is like a little advertisement and it's like it's got gross stuff. And it's got bugs and blood and stuff. It should also be like it's got farts and butts.
The Nerf Bible.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's just first business idea of the year.
Jesus came back Bible from the desert with his stank ass.
Hey, has everybody seen this article about life in Pompeii?
No.
That the New York Times put out.
Is there a new? I feel like over the course of this show, we have discussed multiple art. Is there a new one?
This was before the holidays, so I'm going to drop it. I'm going to drop it in the comments so y'all can read it, or just so you can see the headline. It turns out the New York Times has discovered that slaves had terrible lives in Italy. Let's just take the first paragraph. Archaeologists excavating parts of the ancient city of Pompeii made public new discoveries on Friday that provide a grim glimpse into the bleak existence of enslaved people two millenniums ago, including the existence of a, and I'm quoting here, this is a hyphenate, bakery prison.
I live in a bakery prison of my own making. It's called my body.
Pompeii had Panera, y'all. We've had killer lemonade since before the
Panera.
This is amazing, by the way, that they didn't do a headline that said life for the lowest class in ancient Pompeii. It was
not that bad.
It was
Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you go down, you do get the complex stratification of Pompeii's society.
Yeah, man.
Including the lowest classes, which included the majority of its citizens.
Stop.
Mm-hmm. All of this is coming from a second century author who wrote a book called, quote, The Golden Ass.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just not going to talk about that part.
We're getting there.
So within this, it says that slaves and donkeys were locked up to grind grain. Were the donkeys also grinding the grain?
Yes. The donkeys turned the millstones. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And their hooves were misshapen from the weird grooves in the pavement. It actually really sounds like it did suck. But also the donkeys lived with the slaves. So like you had pets.
There are many mysteries of ancient history. I have never wondered, hey, was it awesome to be a slave in Pompeii?
No. And I'm really glad that they're providing this information. Although I still like better the last dispatch we heard from Pompeii, which was the one where they found what appeared to be a review of a chicken stall.
Mm-hmm.
Like a restaurant review of a chicken establishment.
If the New York Times comes to me and goes, this experience will be a complex one, I'm like, oh, you mean fascist? Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. The experience of having a tumor will be a complex and nuanced one. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to pass.
But there's no mystery here. It's just life for the lowest class in ancient Pompeii? It was awful, period.
I guarantee you they had such an argument over that. There's some fucking dipshit. Right.
No, once they figured out they can't like make money off of everybody in Pompeii because everybody who could have yelled at them about it is volcanized.
Yeah.
And has been for many centuries. Once they figured that out, they were cool with the headline.
We don't wanna alienate the supporters of Aulus Rustius Verus.
They're gonna have Marine Dowd up here in like 3 weeks in a countercolumn that was like Pompeii's bread was worth the cost.
The bakery prison was a net good.
Can I zoom out for a second? So please, I'm not an archaeologist. Among many things I'm not, archaeologist is not one of them.
What?
I assume Pompeii is a popular archaeology site because, given what happened with Mount Vesuvius, it has been preserved in a way that other ancient sites have not. I don't know if that's true, but let's just take that on
faith. Also, uncles.
So, is it possible that, without having any knowledge here, is it possible that we are extrapolating what the ancient world was like from one city without knowing what it was in relation to other city? I guess what I'm saying is like...
It doesn't sound like us, but it's certainly possible.
What if it turns out this, like, Pompeii was like the...
Was like Texas A&M of Italy?
The Orlando of Italy, of the ancient world.
What a terrifying concept.
No, I'm listening.
Or the Myrtle Beach, maybe, is the better version of Italy.
Yeah.
Where you're like, ah, putt-putt was deeply important to the ancient peoples.
Oh, I want to find...
The slaves who turned the windmill behind the fountain had terrible lives. But so entertaining.
See, I want to find...
Who can say whether it was worth it?
Like, what if there are thousands of millennia-old... Italian ghosts who are like, Pompeii, that's not what we lived like. God damn it, you think we're like Pompeii?
That was Branson, Missouri.
Oh no, Branson is centrally located, so when the United States is taken by the sea, Branson's going to be one of the last surviving sites, which means future civilizations are going to find it more intact.
Their most important stronghold, Nebraska.
They loved the Ottomans.
What would be inaccurate about America being defined by Branson, Missouri?
I think we deserve nothing
better than that.
There's no park. There might be a water park.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be like an important part of United States culture was Andy Williams. For a long time, United States culture revolved around
Yakov Smirnoff. But it's not Dolly Splash Country.
Yeah. I want to find the one city. See, I think my primary motivation in archaeology would be finding more buried cities so that I could find the one city that everybody agreed were assholes. Like, they would be great if we find out that there's 8 other cities and they all have like graffiti on the
Ted
walls.
Cruz's ancestral homeland.
Right. Because there's a note at the end of this that says that there's a room that they found and the shrine in this excavation was found to, and on the wall there were mottos for this guy, Aulus Rustius Verus, who was a candidate for elected office. And the dwelling likely belonged to a supporter of that candidate. So, like, I want to find the 8 other cities that were like, fuck Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
Pompeii's full of dicks. They did
their pizza sucks.
They had a bakery prison, and it made bakery prison pizza, which was ass. And they were idiots who lived in the same room with donkeys, which none of the rest of us did.
Or asses, which made the bakery.
Have you ever noticed that Pompeii pizza tastes like donkey? Well, here's why.
What's the deal with getting annihilated by an ancient volcano?
I'm glad Vesuvius erupted. That's right, I said it.
Hey, on the wall.
You're listening to Sports Talk Radio Milan.
WMIL. Let's hear it. What about you, Varys? Yeah, you know, I just want to throw out the prettiest here from suburban Milan. I just want to say I'm faster than a fucking volcano.
You know, I think the thing about Pompeii is they never supported their sports teams like we do here. They're just not tough.
Not all. You know what AC Milan says? Anti-combustible, meaning volcano hits me, I don't burst into flame like some weaker cities, huh?
If they really deserve the name of the Herculaneum, they would have outrun the notoriously slow.
Disappointment
flow of
to
lava.
The name of Hercules and of the Roman Empire. That's all I got to say about it. I'm out.
Achilles' entire body's ass.
The Shutdown Full Cast. I am Spencer Hall, and you are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I am joined, as always, by Ryan Nanny, Holly Anderson, Jason Kirk, and Brian Floyd on the ones and twos. We have the immortal Michael Serber. Thank you for joining us.
For a minute.
Nope.
You totally did.
Nope. It's right here in front
immortal.
Of
immortal.
It's a lot of proper. It's a lot of
he is immortal. He's
cursed with the ever living disease.
That is. That's why he roots for Clemson.
Serber, you would be such a chill. You would be such a chill vampire, Serber.
Oh yeah, I think I'd be really good at that. I've watched. I've watched a lot of vampire shows.
So you didn't just go for chill. You went for good at that. Like you have a set of skills that would translate.
I think any vampire label you want to slap on me, I think I could pull off.
So like sexy, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah, obviously sexy, super chill, like
dangerous.
The Underlord research. King business vampire.
Elusive.
Oh, fuck yeah, I could do that for sure.
Classy, elegant.
You could lounge with like a kind of casual menace on a large chair.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the Eric the Viking on True Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I really this is my fault. I really hoped we wouldn't talk about True Blood in 2024, but here we are. We've already broken that resolution.
Day one.
Hey, a full third of people on this show watch that show end to end, and all we're not sorry about it.
Just a third?
I did not.
It's at least half.
Wait, you too?
Oh, Floyd.
That's two-thirds.
Floyd, I've never been happier for your companionship.
I did not know look that y'all
you.
Continued.
Look at you.
Jason and
I'm
Sarah,
happy on this island here. Me and you.
The Werepanther season.
No, look not, at, look at you classy TV watchers.
Coastal leads Brian Floyd and Ryan Manny refusing to read about America's blue-collar vampires.
Out of touch with Louisiana Americans.
Ooh. Tampa to Pullman bailing out on the Werepanther seasons and denying American Werepanther heritage.
Ew, blood. I get that from poor people.
Hey, speaking of poor people's blood.
This isn't a Stanford podcast. Calm down.
No, okay. Speaking of poor people's blood, but not in a Stanford podcast sense. Mm-hmm. Floyd, how much money did we figure out we would have made if we bet the money line last year on every game Ted Cruz had shown up at?
24x. Is what you would make.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah, my it's favorite, better than investing in stocks.
You guys may have seen a certain media outlet trending this morning that we don't usually have a whole lot to say about. That outlet is, of course, Barstool Longhorns. And I just wanted to highlight them as really as having an emblematic moment of what it means to unite a nation. And that is a photograph of Ted Cruz in burnt orange at the Sugar Bowl with Barstool Longhorn asking, and I quote, "Get this fucker out my colors." Now, among the many branches of discourse that flow downhill from that, I think my favorite is the surge of Aggies who comes in about 35 minutes later, led by a guy who says, "Not every Longhorn fan is Antifa."
I disagree.
But we can take a number of paths from here. But
nobody,
I love that he is ending the year as he began it.
Nobody wants this man on their sideline.
No,
not a single person.
It was in the first quarter when he showed up. Someone was like, "Hey, I just got a text, and here's Ted Cruz," and everyone was like, "Oh no."
He has been present for a Baylor loss this season, a Texas A&M loss this season, like.
Astros,
I think the best thing going for the Dallas Cowboys, again, on our NFL podcast, is that Ted Cruz doesn't A, he's from Houston, so he doesn't really support the Cowboys, and B, he doesn't go to Cowboys games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Cowboys Super Bowl, lock it up.
Well, he'll be there for that.
Yeah, it's fair.
I think this is a reminder that in any revolutionary situation, you would look over and, like, if you're tearing down the Bastille or whatever the symbolic, you know, object of oppression is, whatever that opponent is, you're going to look over and there's going to be somebody over here to your right who you're like, okay, whatever. Like when they tore down
just
the Bastille.
Barstool Longhorn up here on this wall together.
I think Washington as a team should have, like, carried Ted Cruz off the field on their shoulder.
Like Floyd of Rosedale?
against his will? Like,
are they going to bronze him?
I wouldn't object to that. He is a very well-preserved pig.
Like a bug on his back.
That's Ted Cruz's voice. I thought no image would please me more than the whoever was it whipped up Jim Harbaugh in the Che Guevara shirt.
The Wall Street Journal, yeah. No. When we say whoever, it's the Wall Street fucking Journal.
I knew it was a blog of little to no account, but I didn't know it was that one.
Yeah.
Wait, are you serious?
Yes.
That was?
Yes. They'll just give Photoshop to anybody these days.
You know,
Journals, they've become posters.
they're so straight laced. You know, somebody was like, "Hey, man, do you want to do Jim Harbaugh's mouth?" They're like, "Oh yes, god damn it, yeah, it's the first thing I want to do."
Oh boy.
Whoa. Oh come on! All that person can see, like somebody's like another line drawing of a guy who's going to be dead in 5 years, who's worth like $10 billion. Yeah, okay, fine.
Are you saying Jim Harbaugh's going to be dead in 5 years?
No, he's way too high strung to run out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How do you think Tom Crane's doing this morning?
Man, he's glad that it's the greatest possible distance of linear time between now and the holidays. because listen, if Jim wins this whole thing and then Jack turns it around and wins it in Baltimore, or John turns around and wins it in Baltimore, excuse me, you got a long time between now and next Thanksgiving.
Like Tom Crane's holiday card is going to be like, grew a lot of good tomatoes this year. Really, really perfecting my sourdough recipe.
Maybe he should adopt the Kirk Ferentz press conference attitude and be like, hey, take a step back.
All here. Right. So let's let's start with the Citrus Bowl, which, Holly, are you she is not done levitating after Tennessee
you
shut
can't
out
listen.
Iowa in the Citrus Bowl.
I have landed upon our mantra for the year, and it is, forgive me, it is whoever tweeted at me yesterday, can't spell Citrus Bowl without UT, brackets, complimentary. Love it. I'm here. We're gonna finish the season at 19, somewhere between 19 and 23. That's exactly where I want to be. Oh, I am so comfortable right now. You can't tell me shit.
Did we mention the score? Can I mention the score?
Go for it.
35-0.
Good so, grief. Hey, how did a bunch of those scores happen?
A bunch of those scores happened when Nico Iamaliva.
Who's he?
He's the freshman quarterback.
Wow, so he's coming back next year.
Had he ever started before?
No.
Had he ever played outside garbage time?
No, not really.
Wow, so it's all upside for the Vols.
What's Iowa supposed to be good at again?
Complimentary football, which is why they looked at Nico and said, hey, man, nice calves.
So that's like 62 points translated to regular football.
I would put somebody on the true freshman quarterback scoring multiple rushing touchdowns, but I'm not a defensive guru.
The hard backbone of Iowa football, the defense that allowed 232 yards rushing.
So Iowa fired Brian Ferentz on, I believe it was October 30th.
What for?
Unclear at best. That was right after, that was about a week after they lost the Minnesota game with the punt return that got called back, et cetera, et cetera. But they let Brian Ferentz coach out the season, a thing which I think we all said at the time was very weird. Like, you just don't see coordinators who get to, especially with that much season left. It's not like they were like, yeah, you can coach the bowl game after, even though we fired you for the last game, whatever. What do you think Iowa averaged in terms of scoring output in the six games that they played after that?
I truly can't guess. Six?
You've overshot but only slightly.
Four.
The answer is 10. Iowa scored 10 points a game, most of them thanks to a 22-0 victory over Rutgers, and I do want to get to Rutgers in a little bit.
Hey, speaking of shutouts.
Yeah.
How many other FBS teams did you say were shut out this season?
Oh, I got to dig this up. I think so Iowa suffered.
Oh, tough.
Iowa suffered three shutouts.
Citrus
this
Bowl
season.
High is still with you too, isn't it?
Iowa suffered three shutouts this season, including the Big Ten Championship and their bowl game. The rest of FBS combined, I believe, was shut out 22 times. Like, I just...
Also, based on a stat from non-Mormon Matt Brown, the average number of wins for a team that gets shut out three times in a year is about three. Iowa won 10 games.
It's amazing. It continues to be amazing.
They win or get shut out.
But like,
Jason was right about this team all along. This is an extraordinary achievement.
It's January 2nd as we're recording this, so maybe something will change in the next 24 hours. But the other thing is that, like, by letting it just be like the Brian Ferentz farewell tour for the last 2 months, they have made no progress figuring out who the next offensive coordinator is. There's been a shit ton of hires going on. Kirk Ferentz was asked about this in December, and he was like, ah, we'll figure that out in January. Dude!
Because what was he focused on instead?
Not scoring any points in their last two games.
The plan for the Citrus Bowl.
It is amazing that somehow... Brian Ferentz, Kirk Ferentz had to watch his son get fired, and he was like, I will dig my heels in even more. Want me to bring in somebody new? I will slow play this until you fall asleep.
What if it's just like first day of spring ball, and the reporters are like, hey, is that Brian?
he's on a weekly contract.
Is that Brian in a polo on
he's
the sideline?
Baseball hat.
I'm allowed to bring my son to work. You telling me I can't bring my son to work?
Kirk Ferentz is going to call a friend and go, hey, do you know any of our friends who are dying and coached quarterback? and that's the guy he's going to hire, yeah. whoever that is, right? Like,
to go back to Rutgers ever so briefly, on the 40 for 40 that we recorded about the pinstripe pull, I'm pretty sure it was Jason who pointed out that Rod Gilmore was on the call, and we had a little bit of a discussion about how Rod was going to treat Miami's unorthodox approach to endgame scenarios. The important thing for you to know is that Miami needing to score twice, scored once, successfully recovered an onside kick, and then basically couldn't do anything else. And they did all this with two timeouts left on the board. And during their first drive, as the clock is just like bleeding away and these timeouts are just staring you right in the fucking face in the last game of the season, Rod Gilmore, and I'm paraphrasing here, basically says, you know, a lot of people take issue with how Mario Cristobal handles endgame situations, but this is his MO. This is how he always does it. And he pretty much just leaves it there. He doesn't say, no, he's just saying he does this on purpose. Yes, it's not a defense.
A lot of people think this sucks, but to be clear, it exists.
But to be clear, it's consistent.
Some of you may think this is an accident. It's not.
You know, the thing about this restaurant is,
now, you might hate this, but what you need to know is it's real.
The health inspectors did shut down this IHOP, but they do that every month, and that's important to know.
Ryan, Mario Cristobal's game management is a nuanced and complex issue, a controversial one with many sides.
Like, to leave...
To leave two timeouts
just sitting there. So Rutgers, a team that like only exists to bleed clock away from you. Oh, fucking! It was really an impressive bowl season for Florida teams as a whole. USF is the only FBS team.
USF dominated, baby.
The standard bearer.
And they fucking destroyed Syracuse. Florida, obviously not
the flagship, is a pirate ship.
I can't believe Florida State wants to join that conference. Are y'all ready?
Hey
man, you know what? South teams with South in front of the team in front of the state did pretty well around the Gulf Coast generally, because as we've seen, the two major teams from Alabama, flaming disappointments in both their games. South Alabama, wrecked shop.
Oh man, bowl season has been just a delight this year. Just a real
delight.
I'm having
a great time.
Hey, remember that time when we were like, you know, if Florida State beats Georgia, they could make a claim for a national championship.
What ended up happening is they didn't play Georgia. So.
No, they did not.
No.
I reiterate, Florida should claim a national title off this.
Florida?
And Florida State
Florida State.
Florida State also. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
As always, if 1941 Bama can claim, anyone can claim.
We do owe Georgia some sort of edible arrangement for knocking the national darling label off Florida State. That was an uncomfortable few days for everybody.
Well, that's done.
I really appreciate Kirby Smart putting up the biggest point differential in a bowl game ever, and then going out to the podium and being like, we got to do something about these bowl games. You just feel terrible for the kids. You're the one who pulled the trigger.
Would you look at what college football has done to these student athletes?
He's a real-life Eric Andre.
You can't see, but Jason Kirk is literally doing the Eric Andre meme, right?
Who did this?
Why would the NCAA do this?
The
funny thing is, he's completely right.
Yes. He is right.
He put in Will Muschamp's son. What more could he have done to not score points than to put a Muschamp in charge of the ball?
Thrown to like Stetson Bennett's brother.
We usually don't put much stock in awareness raising campaigns on this show, but that might have done it.
Oh man.
Yeah, like do you want more Muschamp football? NCAA, or do you want to fix your calendar?
Kirby's like, I'm disgusted to score this many points. It's un-American.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed by how good we are.
I'm embarrassed by how bad Florida State is. Somebody needs to come and see something.
It's just inexcusable that our team is this awesome.
I respect anybody on the Florida State roster who went to the portal strictly to avoid this game. If they didn't even have an option and they were just like, no. Nope.
I'm actually coming back to Florida State in a month. I just didn't want to deal with this bullshit.
Like, are you turning pro? Nah.
It's more of a trial separation.
Yeah, no,
we're going to get back together.
I mean, I'm gonna go hang out at Dad's for a while on his couch. He's cool. Yeah, and then I'm going to come back to Florida State because y'all have fun. Y'all enjoy that down there.
I think I'm going to go play lacrosse.
And now we're going to get, like, Is there any point total that could have reached where Florida State fans wouldn't have said, well, that doesn't really count? Like, that's the beauty of this. Is like, at some part of this has to count. Some part of this has to be real.
The minute that they passed 17-3, where you could have gone, what a hard-fought defensive battle. The minute it went above that into, like, 24-3, you're like, yep, nope, nope, your claim's gone.
And yet, had a better time than Ohio State.
Still had.
And yet, threw for more passing yardage than Bama did.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Missouri's a really good team.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, are you on your thank you Missouri right?
I'm on my thank you Missouri. Welcome back to the conference.
Thank you, India. Thank you, Providence.
Right. You were lost in the Big 12 and various other conferences for so long, but you returned to your natural territory, the SEC, where obviously by quality you belonged all along, Missouri.
We've gone
congratulations. Eli Drinkwitz, a tolerable and not at all irritating presence within the league, a merit and a credit to everyone.
Gross, dude. Just stop.
Yeah,
Eli Drinkwitz to Columbus. Let's start this bandwagon now, baby.
So entering bowl season, we threw around at least one, I forget if multiple, like Big Ten East misery scenarios. Ohio State had honestly an unbelievably bad bowl game. Penn State, not great. And Michigan's favored to win national title. So that is the state of your Big Ten East misery.
But again, Rutgers Michigan did
right
win.
Now, Michigan, as of right now, could not possibly. I think Michigan and Rutgers, they have an understanding. Rutgers is sort of tagging along.
The standard bearers of the division, yes.
Yes, the two best teams in the Big Ten East are both. And Maryland as well. So your Big Three, your new Big Three, let's say.
It's just a shame that the divisions are going away because now Ohio State and Penn State get to duck Rutgers in Maryland.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least UCLA will get a tour of, you know, those football powers.
Actually, all the former Pac-12 schools moving to the Big Ten get to do so off the strength of, like, a very strong bowl season. I'm excited to see who that extremely goes poorly for, because it's going to be at least one of them. Like, if there is anything we have learned about conference realignment in the last, you know, 15 or so years, I feel bad doing this because it's always Nebraska, but Nebraska's got to be you. There's going to be one Nebraska who's like, oh, not only is this going to be good for us financially, but we are going to be really good here. We are going to, like, kick some ass here. And that probably isn't going to be true for somebody. And I'm looking at USC, and I'm really wondering if it's going to be you.
Yeah. I think it's the teams that at the quote-unquote top of the Big Ten West that have the most worries about, because that was a wobbly structure for quite some time, inflated a number of records over the years, and that's done now. That's just done now.
Kirk Ferentz in open water is amazing. You know how you can't take a lake barge out onto the ocean because the amplitude of the waves will crack the lake barge in half because it's too long? That feels like Iowa in the open water of the Big Ten. Like, the vessel that once, like, was sailing to 10 games safely is now just going to snap in half. They're going to go right back to, like, 6 wins.
It's summer. Major League Baseball's in full swing, and there's one app for you if you want last-minute deals on Major League Baseball games, and that's GameTime.co. That's right, GameTime.co. I'm looking at the app right now, and I'm picking out America's team, really, the Kansas City Royals. And at Kauffman Stadium, just in a couple days, there's tickets available for $16. And then, well, I don't want to up the stakes too much here, but let's go to next week. It looks like they're playing the Chicago White Sox. There are tickets available right now for $3. You could see a Major League Baseball game in Chicago for $3. What stadium, you ask? Not important. It's in Chicago. But GameTime.co is not just for Major League Baseball games, even though you can get great deals for that. You can also get great deals for concerts, football games. Those are going to be coming up pretty soon. You can find them on GameTime.co. I use GameTime.co to purchase last-minute tickets for an Olivia Rodrigo concert. Tyler Childers did not show up at mine. That would have been awesome, but it was awesome nonetheless. And GameTime.co made it super easy. I got my parking through GameTime.co, and I got great tickets for my wife and I. GameTime.co made all of that so easy and one of the greatest concert experiences I've ever had in my entire life. And I'll be using them again. In fact, I'm seeing a little bit called the Beaches in late September. And where did I get my ticket? That's right. Even ahead of time. I didn't wait till the last minute because GameTime.co has you covered then as well. That's what I love about it. Whenever I want to get a ticket for an event, whether I heard about it months before and procrastinated to no end and have left myself in a lurch, you can save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, anything else. So take the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets with GameTime. You can download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code FULLCAST for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code FULLCAST for $20 off. Download GameTime today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Hold on, I have an important update.
It's imaginable.
This is a tweet from Ted Cruz as of...
Thank God.
20 minutes ago. To all the dishonest press hacks blaming me for the Longhorns' heartbreaking loss. No, okay. What? If you give me the wins I've cheered on, too. Which
no. There's no way he did the math on this. There's no way he has enough posters on staff.
So he's got... Here's it turns... You'll see the turn quickly. Astros World Series 2017-22. Yep.
The cheating one?
The cheating one, but, you know, whatever. Those are things that happened and happened relatively recently. Mm. 7 consecutive Astros ALCS. I mean, decidedly awesome. Less impressive.
Awesome. You're the 90s Braves.
UT's 2006 Rose Bowl victory over USC. I don't believe he was there. And no. He wasn't Ted Mm-mm. Cruz at that point, so I don't think that one counts. A&M beating Alabama in 2021, a thing that definitely meant a ton for Texas A&M that year and every year since.
I bet he wasn't at several of these.
And the fifth bullet point, the Rockets' 94 finals win.
Bullshit.
What? What are you talking about?
You know who convinced Jordan to go play baseball? None other than Theodore Cruz.
Yeah, it's a good sport.
A Texan politician arguing against math, you say.
Mm-hmm. I am just delighted.
Well, I never.
Fuck off,
you know what? The most Texas
remember
thing...
that time he called a basketball hoop a basketball ring?
Yeah.
And he's trying to claim he swung a Rockets title?
I really appreciate that in defense of his Texas Longhornsness, Ted Cruz decided to be like, oh yeah, well what about the time Vince Young beat USC? Why are we not talking about that?
Vince Young and me beat USC.
I did that.
I do love claiming this millennium's Texas sports victories, right? Like, what a lineage you have to work with.
Mm-hmm.
There's some Mavs.
He doesn't. He's a Rockets fan, so he can't take credit for any of the Mavs.
Can't claim to have. Can't claim Dirk as one of your pupils. No.
Luka would drink him under the table.
The defensive coordinator on that Texas team, by the way, was George Santos. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
He was good. He was good.
He hasn't actually mentioned in here, by the way, any other losses he may have attended.
Mm-hmm. No.
And the problem, and this is where I say again, this man doesn't have enough posters on his staff. Texas is full of them. Somebody's going to dig up the whole list.
I know one he attended, his wedding, because Heidi took an L that day.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Hard one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He
went to a Baylor-Houston game wearing gear for both teams. Did they tie on that day, Ted? Because one of those teams lost.
That's the one where there's a picture of him drinking a Sam Adams, which is the saddest part of the picture. I've done way too much research into
this. Sam Adams, the Lone Star.
All right, so since Ted Cruz has dragged us back to the Texas-Washington game, should we talk about the semifinals?
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I think longtime listener Mike points out, do you realize how good you have to be at football for your name to look exactly like penis and nobody mentions it anymore? No one. I didn't even see Texas fans bringing it up in the run-up to this game.
I just wanted two notes on two different games really briefly. One, congratulations to Memphis for continuing to prove Alex Kirshner to be completely wrong about.
The Memphis bowl game was the emotional semifinal.
Jesus. Yes. Hold on. Hold on while the spirit of Stephen Godfrey takes over Spencer Hall's body for a moment.
They are kindred. Especially regarding the management of the team by Ryan Silverfield, who is obviously awesome and very good at his job, leading Memphis to a 10-3 record and a bowl win in the Liberty Bowl against Iowa State. Congratulations. Jesus, again, dropped the charges. I would also like to congratulate Penn State on rounding into form and delivering a heretofore unanticipated, unimaginable 11th win into the hands of not just Ole Miss, but say it with me, in the year 2024, make it feel good, Lane Kiffin's triumphant Ole Miss team, a phrase that 10 years ago would have reduced you to tears of laughter. A very real thing.
Did you guys see the Ninja Turtles meme last night?
Mm-mm.
Yes.
I disagree with every characterization of every Ninja Turtle in there, but
I agree.
Funny.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, congratulations to the Ole Miss.
Oh,
announced later on, or sorry, Ryan, are you about to say the announcement?
No,
later?
I was going to say the other bit of Memphis trivia that we should acknowledge that they're part of. Congrats to Missouri for being state champions of Tennessee this year, having beaten Middle Tennessee, Memphis, Vanderbilt, and the University of Tennessee.
You can't dent my citrus ball high. I apologize.
You get all the pig's feet. All the pickled pig feet are yours. In any of the convenience stores or gas stations, you can just walk right in, put your bare hand in the jar, and take one.
Get back across the river to your VH porn.
Mm-hmm. You get a whole shipping container full of Zins, buddy. Just stuff them in that lip and keep on driving.
For men.
Sorry, Holly, what were you going to... there was an announcement of some sort?
I believe Jackson Dart has announced his intent to return.
Okay.
Yes, as he is described by a certain wing of the Ole Miss fan base, their scumbag quarterback is returning. Thanks to James Franklin for, again, mustering a somewhat game for about 10 minutes and then ultimately futile performance by punting when they shouldn't and watching Ole Miss pull away from them with a conservative, overmatched, and unimaginative offense. I'm sure...
should we go to Ole Miss at
LSU? I'm sure that'll change
year?
With a different coordinator.
Yes. Yes, okay. We should.
All right.
Ole Miss at what?
At LSU next year.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's either that or Ole Miss at Wake Forest. So.
Absolutely not. There's fences there. We won't get in.
You can stay at my house, though. Come stay at my house.
Sleepover.
Cerber slumber party.
The full cast sleepover. Sponsored by Michael Ray Cerber.
He's right. Don't come to the Wake Forest.
Wake Forest football. Don't come here. Yeah. Do something else.
It's small. Check out our tunnels.
All right. Which semifinals do y'all want to talk about first?
Bama.
I think chronological.
They didn't even win.
I want to talk about. That's why I want to talk about him, Ryan.
I'm glad we buried this deep in the episode because Jason and Spencer and I kind of looked at each other last night, and as this game was winding down and after it wound down in with a tick tick boom, and realized that we have run out of cute ways to do LOL Bama lost episodes because we've had to do so very many of them over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the headline. It's not the headline anymore. We've been recording for 48 minutes, and here we are.
Like, it's like, oh, the 4 seed lost. Okay. They didn't cover. Oh, okay.
Tra-la.
Yeah, when you don't play a football game for a month and you were already having issues with how to perform basic tasks of footballing, turns out you don't get much better at them. I know people always say, oh, bowl practices do a lot of good. You know what? There's a lot of steak dinners and a lot of hanging out in between that happens that sort of, I think, dilutes a lot of that effect. It's better for the younger players, not your established starters. Bama looked super sloppy. And dear God, I do not understand what the hell either Tommy Rees or Jalen Milroe was doing the entire time. That offensive line was very confused. Never, ever, ever got less confused. Jalen Milroe, I rewatched the game today in writing something for Channel 6. I will tell y'all, if danger is here at 12 o'clock and he is at 6 o'clock, Jalen Milroe is not going to drift to 3 or 6.
He's backing it up.
He's going to head.
Is it bad if he's drifting? Is drifting into coverage a thing?
Somehow Milroe was drifting into sacks coverage and fumbles. Like he drifted into.
It looked like a battleship board setting itself up.
There is
I love
one
my
play...
heat-seeking quarterback.
Yeah. What you know? What
he's not afraid of contact.
Not afraid of contact. He's just gonna take on 3, 4, 5 defenders at a time. Sometimes just baffling decisions. At one point in the game, I think he'd had 6 dropbacks and 5 sacks. That was pretty early on, but I don't think those numbers improved.
No, I don't.
It felt like that.
Yeah, I don't think that's right, but I agree that it's spiritually accurate.
It was at one point, and I don't think it. Yeah, like they were awful, and the plan was bad because Tommy Rees was like, "Oh, an empty set with Jalen Milroe where he gets sacked or runs around and does nothing. I'm gonna call about 8 more of those."
I mean,
I thought it was good that they had some personal growth here by running Milroe straight into overmatch line and not their kicker, though. So you have to
be some credit
here. Yeah, picking the right personnel.
Great call.
Bad idea. Yeah,
that's right.
The kicker
I just,
or the
like,
holder.
So the team that was the better team for 3 months was also the better team for 3 hours. That's crazy.
They tried very hard not to be, though.
Michigan looked like shit, but not as shitty as Bama.
Yeah, but Michigan's whole thing is this. They made mistakes. They were like, fuck it, next play. They would make a bigger mistake, and they were like, whatever,
they would make
fuck it, next play.
Michigan would make a new mistake. They like they did one of each special team blunder.
Mm-hmm.
They had probably the most block in the back I have ever seen, and then that kid made the most spectacular catch you've ever seen like 2 plays later. It's what?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Samer still had 2 or 3 of the most embarrassing plays of his career in the game. And on the next snap, he was like, nope, locked down this receiver. Got it. Filled this run. Mike Samerstill, who was the guy who was matched up, I believe, not against Marvin Harrison Jr., but against Jackson Smith and Jigba in the game last year or 2 years ago. I can't remember. He was fantastic. And he was converted from offense.
Yeah, I thought you were saying he was still in school. So don't dare.
No, but he had one of the worst 2 or 3 plays I've ever seen on film. And he's completely unflappable. Michigan missed a field goal late. Totally unflappable. J.J. McCarthy.
Michigan missed a field goal late after getting gifted excellent field position from a fumble recovery.
Yeah. Like I think if the position had been reversed and Michigan center started like spraying the ball all over the place on shotgun snaps, I think JJ McCarthy would have caught it and thrown a TD. They're just something like mentally they are different in that they're like, awesome, we just made a terrible mistake. Let's see what we can do on the next one. Oh, shanked a punt? Awesome. Like they are deeply unflappable on a level that is like almost psychotic. It is the most Jim Harbaugh team I have ever seen in my life.
I think a lot of that is because the defense is so good, and the defense really did not fuck up that much. Like the longest drives of the night for Alabama were 55 and 52 yards. Alabama really only scored because they have a fucking boomstick of a field goal kicker, or because they got good field position. Like there was not a point where it was like, oh, Michigan on a sustained basis cannot stop the Alabama offense. There were little spurts where it would happen, and then they would shut them down and force them to kick a field goal or something like that. Like, the offense was highly inconsistent, and special teams was a mess. But like going back and looking at it, it's like, oh, the defense was like, really did more than pull its weight in this game.
Oh, especially the defensive line. Like they had Alabama baffled the entire game. Never really adjusted. The only protections that they were really able to run were based on like a late run threat that Bama really didn't get to develop because they were so dominant up front on the final play. And follow my sentence here. I know everyone wants to criticize that last play, but they should. It was a terrible call, especially given what they were seeing. Alabama's right tackle got thrown into Jalen Milroe on that last play by an undersized defensive end for Michigan.
I think the most impressive thing Michigan did, at least in terms of like a stand, was Alabama's last drive of the game. Because it completely felt like Alabama was going to get the ball back. They had already kicked up 2 50-yard field goals. It was like, oh, this is what's going to happen. They have a minute and a half left. They have, I think, 2 timeouts at that point. They're going to drive down. They're not going to be able to just like easily score a touchdown, but they're going to kick the game winner, and that's going to be the way this game ends. And the fact that they just allowed them nothing. And to your point, Tommy Rees still really didn't have a good enough plan for, like, this is what we are doing on what should be a pull-out all-the-stops drive. Yeah, they kicked a lot of ass on defense last night.
Tremendous amount of ass, particularly their ends, who destroyed that last play single-handedly. Like, I think you can say that was a bad call because it didn't work. No. Given the kind of pressure they had seen from those ends and from the line overall, counting on them to overrush seemed like a dumb bet versus they're just going to blow up the block and completely end up in the backfield no matter what you do. You know, also, I love that Michigan weighed, like, they did the Derek Lewis thing. I don't know if you've ever seen Derek Lewis fight in UFC. He'll go like two or three rounds and he'll look terrible. And you're like, where's the big right hook? Where's the big right hook? And at one point late in the fight, when it looks like he's about to get his ass completely beat and get tapped out, there comes the right hook and he knocks the dude out. Michigan went back to Corum for the like crucial last two rushing plays, scored, shoved Bama off the field. Yeah, Jason's right. The team that was better for the last 3 months, when it counted, they were the better team last night.
Floyd, what were you going to say?
Oh, the last two plays there, Michigan has kind of a mini fridge guy, Mason Graham, who broke through the line on, I think, a sweep and broke up that play before the final play. And it was just like, oh, the Michigan can cave this line in with dudes that look like mini fridges that just run into you.
They got a lot of appliances.
They have like kegerators on the line where it's just like, here they come.
I have big concerns about Michigan's strength of schedule. I think they're just not legit because, you know, they didn't play a tough ACC team.
I mean,
after
watch what Ohio State and Penn State did in bowl season, you have to downgrade the schedule even further, really.
I mean, you got to discount what they did for the first few weeks because of the sign stealing. So I'm not convinced yet. I don't know. I think those things are very important.
It's not necessarily relevant, but it's very funny to me that Michigan could win a national title with Jim Harbaugh only coaching the team for 9 games.
It's a huge victory for the gig worker economy.
That's right. Jim Harbaugh is quiet quitting on Michigan.
I love this man's work-life balance.
If you looked at this just on paper, you'd be like, oh, did he die midseason? Oh, God, that's so tragic. You'd be like, nope, still
nope,
there.
Nope.
No, he's just weird.
DNP weird.
I feel like Boris Dion got a couple of those in the other day.
DNP weird. Yeah.
It's replaces freckles, I think. It's our.
Right, yeah. Also, for anybody who would dare to suggest that sign stealing had anything with what happened last night, what about intelligence or knowing anything had anything to do with that game you watched last night? There was a whole lot of not knowing. That was easily the most brainless football game I've watched at a high level in a real long time, and that's not a complaint.
I think Michigan's defense is going to call the 9 guys storming straight up the middle play.
The winning play for Michigan was on one end, headbutt, and on the other one, it was smash.
J.J. McCarthy saw something, and that's why he called tipped ball that turns into huge pass play.
That's why he called wild scramble thrown 2 yards out of bounds that the receiver somehow brings in for a first down.
Remember when J.J. McCarthy threw a pick on the first play of the game, but it didn't count? Oh, man.
Yeah, just
that tip ball was getting the best throw he had all game. Yes, he was just like, how did it get better?
Yes.
Yeah,
beautiful tone setter.
Yeah, like, this is an intellectual football team. My ass! This is a team, by the way, that in terms of successfully completing accurately executed football tasks is at like a 71 and not feeling real good. I don't know if I'm going to pass this class. Guess what? Your opponent failed. They got a 68.
You want me to kick the ball? Can't do that. But you want me to pick up someone and slam them on the ground?
Their punt returner dropped the ball. He muffed the punt. And they replaced him and the other dude muffed it.
They put in the specialist.
This guy's fucked. He doesn't have it either.
Who is the Georgia had a famous punt catcher for a few years.
Hudson Mason.
Yes. Michigan put in their Hudson Mason, and he caught the whoopsies that it infected the entire team, and they're like, "God damn it! Now we got to punch him even harder."
Man, it would have. I'm fine with how this game ended. If they had lost that game on a muffed punt safety, that would have been the funniest shit possible. And it would have cemented Alabama as the most Auburn team in Alabama history this week.
You ever finished the month with like $3 left in your bank account? That was Michigan last night. Right? You're like, did all the checks clear? Fuck. Okay, God. Whew.
Three really heavy bucks, though.
Yeah, three. Quality dollars. You know, who got it better than me? No one. Going to Taco Bell. Getting a dinner. I say this with all affection and all credit awarded. Do you know how good a football team you have to be to play that ass and still win?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's the Dolly Parton quote. It takes a lot of money to look this cheap.
Yeah.
It's the shit we used to say about Bama when they would sleepwalk early. Like, yeah. Dumb yeah. team.
Give Michigan a normal game's worth of bullshit, and they win this by, what, 14 in regulation?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Instead, they had to do all that bullshit they had to do last night, but they still won. It was amazing.
Awesome! And we get to play more football!
They played that whole game, and they were like, "Wee, more!" I love this team. I wanted to say that because that's the affectionate, I can take some of the nervousness from watching that game and go, whoo, I don't feel any anxiety. If I talk about the next game, I'm still kind of fucked up by it. I'm still kind of unnerved by everything that happened in the Washington-Texas game. A great football game, but with an ending that honestly is like the uncut gems of playoff finishes.
It was just a weirdly paced whole situation. Like we got to watch the Michigan game with Michigan fans, which placed a certain level of involvement, and then it was like, okay, here comes the come down. And if your come down is Washington, Texas, you're not prepared for the experience that you're.
Floyd put it best. Floyd, what did you say coming out of the Rose Bowl?
Oh, we were going to have a whiplash because you're going from just man ball where you're slamming into each other to two teams that like hair on fire. Ball going everywhere in every direction. And, like, that game started with a Texas punt, and then it was like, oh, it's on. Like, right after that, it just was like, let's go.
No, we had a basement full of Michigan fans, and I distinctly remember someone, maybe me, I don't know, saying as the Washington-Texas game was in its early minutes, you know, oh, man, this is so relaxing. We know exactly what's going to happen.
It was the sense that, like, okay, here comes the fun game after all that.
Yeah, here comes our cool down to the pop song.
But
it never quite, and it never, like, nothing about this game really made sense in continuity, and the ending made sense because you go, oh, yeah, Washington, you know, look.
Time out real quick.
Yeah.
Lest we think we are complaining, this is the most fun pairing of semifinals. This is the most I have ever enjoyed a pair of semifinal games. Like, just in aggregate. I don't know.
Last year
was good, but this one just I said this to Jason, I think, like, coming out of last week. Like, wouldn't it be funny if after the chalky chalk chalk season we have, we ended up with this, like, relatively, like, whimsical pairing in the title game?
Well, part of what made, I think, both of these so entertaining is that it was – you have four very good teams – who still can do some really dumb shit.
Yes.
Like, nobody...
And that makes them relatable. That makes them like us.
Yes. Like, nobody who...
I really see myself out there.
Michigan was probably the team that was closest to the old Alabama, more recently Georgia archetype of, like, we just play perfect football, and you're just going to have to sit there and be smothered by it. Like, that was their archetype over the course of the year.
Or they'd like us to think that, and then look what they turned up with.
Right. Yeah. And the fact that they didn't sort of open things up for everybody else, but, like...
When Michigan is Auburn, shit has gone off the rails.
Yes.
That really does put it in perspective.
Well, yeah. I think the difference between these two, I think, both extremely enjoyable, entertaining football games as this. In the first one, the sort of events that happened were standard football events that largely were like, okay, that's within the course of a rational coach's expectation of what should happen in a, like, let's play defense, run the ball, let's weigh our probabilities and come out mostly on the conservative, sensible side of things. On the other end, there are two guys who built spaceships you have to pilot with your dicks. Like, I don't...
Oh, this was like watching a magic competition in a theater that was burning down.
No one's panicking, right? No, that's the way it's supposed to be.
We're talking about this. This is a bunch of guys confronted with having to land a commercial airliner.
Uh-huh. I could easily do it.
Yeah. But
this is your captain, Steve Sarkisian, speaking.
I've got Wikipedia on my phone. I could do it.
Two guys who both know how to get the plane in the air, and then
it turns out I don't have cell service. This could be a problem.
See, it was a PDF on my phone, but I don't have cell service on the landing part. So
it turns out.
I mean, how hard could it be? It's one direction down.
It's true.
Like, and
airport that way.
And the longer things went, the less sense they made. At the half, yes. Michael Penix had like 255 yards passing and was automatic on every single completion,
and the game was tied at that point?
yeah you're like, right? Oh man, Washington's got this, they're yes. smoking them, and you're like 21-21.
Yep.
And on the other hand, in the second half, it was like, oh man, Texas is really leaning them on the defensive line, and like the offense is coming alive, and you're like, what's the score? 34-21. The worst Washington look. They get two long passes, they get up by two scores.
It did have the feel of like an old NCAA game where you'd sim it and you'd go back and look at the stats, and you'd be like, what the fuck? The team that ran for 500 yards only scored 6 points.
Yeah. None of this adds up. It literally doesn't add up.
No, absolutely none of this adds up. Like, if you look at the actual, like, oh, okay, were these two evenly matched teams? Yeah, it didn't feel like it for long stretches of this game at all. I watched Washington ram into that beefy line over and over again, and I thought, man, they got like 20 yards rushing. They did rush for 100 yards. I still don't really know how, but they did.
There were a lot of points in this game where it was, you kind of wanted to take Washington and be like, hi, you're watching what Michael Penix is doing on these other plays, right? Is there a reason why you'd want to stop doing that cool shit?
You're the little team. They're the big team.
Do little team run, shit.
You should run around them.
This was, I really didn't
like
have
a dog that comes up to a police horse. It's like, that dog is almost as big as
yeah. Like, I think we can bully these guys. No. Go around them. They're fat and tired. I wasn't really like that until the 34-21 point, when Washington, with a 34-21 lead and 12 minutes and 39 seconds left in this game, decided that the way to manage this game, and I knew it was coming. I did. I've watched a lot of Washington this year, and I know once you get into the fourth quarter, the notion of game management is, we'll just keep doing everything we were doing in the first three quarters. It's a little air raidy, but with a special degree of lunacy, because I know that Kalen DeBoer, when you're like, hey, it's 3rd and 1, what do you call? You're like, yeah, we're going to do a triple option with a reverse pitch off of it, and we're going to make sure that there's a tag in case we need to audible to a slant. And yeah, we're going to have Penix running a counter. Like, that's just what they do. And I knew it was coming, and it still didn't help, because with 12 minutes and 39 seconds left, Washington throws 3 straight passes. They do exactly what you said they should do, right? Like, quit trying to run at them. You should throw it. They throw 3 straight incompletions. They punt. And then Texas begins their slow comeback. They have a touchdown drive. Washington responds with a field goal. And you're like, okay, now you're up by 9.
But even on the field goal drive, it was like they threw the ball to get down into field goal range, and then they were like, yep, well, okay, I guess we're supposed to do the responsible thing and run the ball, so we forced Texas to burn some timeouts. And then on third down, they're like, oh, but passing is fucking cool. Let's do that!
Passing's awesome! I kind of understand the decision paralysis.
I'm so bored!
Right. Well, yeah, they totally have arena ball brain, where they're like, just get ball back. Ball back. Give me ball. You're like, well, shouldn't you just run, or, you know, maybe...
What if you had a vegetable? When candy is good! More candy!
Wait, okay, I ate a vegetable.
Youngest at 12:30.
Yes. Yeah, I ate a vegetable. More candy! And and I get it. They were going for the kill shot because mindless aggression has gotten them to this point, and it's not even that mindless when the aggression is going to guys like Roma Dunze, who was thrown at 7 times last night, or no, he was thrown at 6 times and had 5 completions.
I think it was their top 3 receivers had 20 targets and 19 catches. Was that it?
With one
top,
PI?
Top 4 receivers, yeah, top and 3 touchdowns. Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah. So why not, right? Like, that makes sense. And then it didn't work, and I was like, okay, now there's some sort of malign Zinchian force behind this who's just going to make this the most fucked up end game. I tweeted out something about, ha, 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 watch Washington try to run this clock out, and the game didn't end for another 44 minutes. That's how long this took. And at one point, it was fatigue that was making things bad, where you go, but then the terror crept in where you go, oh, no, you guys are fucking up, and Texas might actually come back on this. And nothing solidified that, you know, that sort of external malign force conducting, you know, serious business at the end of this game more than Dylan Johnson getting injured and then the clock stopping.
Let's back up exactly what happened there. So Washington has the ball after recovering an onside kick by Texas with about a minute to play. Texas at that point, I think, has 2 timeouts, if memory serves.
Uh-huh.
They run the ball with Dylan Johnson twice for, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 yard gains. Something, not nothing. Texas is trying to force a fumble the whole time as well. So, like, that specter is looming over here of, like, you're going to fuck this up. And so they're at 3rd and 5 at this point. And they're going to run the ball again because if they can just, like, get the ball snapped – whether or not they get a first down, they can run the clock down to, what is it, about like 20 seconds 20, or so?
I think it was 20, yeah.
And at that point, they call another run play to try to pick up a first down, because obviously a first down wins you the game. But at that point, knowing that Texas is going to need a touchdown to win, a field goal does nothing for them, that you're going to, even with a terrible punt, even potentially with a blocked punt, you're going to give them tricky field position. Like, I am baffled why they didn't just take a knee there, or why they didn't just, like, do a have Michael Penix run around in the backfield to, like, kill 10 seconds and then go down.
Because this is not what they do. This is not what they do.
Yeah.
I am surprised, and actually, if they were going to be like they were, what they would do is just call a one-on-one solo shot to Roma Dunze.
I would have preferred that. I would have preferred that, frankly.
That's who they are. They have a play where it's just like, go do something, and that's how they win ball games.
Yes, and I think that would have felt more true to, like, their spirit or whatever, but, like, to watch.
The reason you're running Dylan there is because you think you're going to get a first down off of it.
But it's trying to be cute in it's trying to split the middle is the problem. It's trying to say, like, we want to keep running the clock. We're scared of the risk of stopping the clock, but we also want to move the chains and just end the and I think you kind of have to pick one or the other, because even
au contraire, right?
Yeah, I mean,
paid professional Kalen DeBoer disagrees,
and doing all of this with, like, a Dylan Johnson who, and all game they've been talking about how he's been fighting off an injury and how he's been, you know, sort of like gritting it out through this, and I'm just like, God damn, I haven't seen a report on how he's looking. I know he got carted off at the end of the game, but I'm just like, that just that really sticks in my teeth in a very unpleasant way.
On the other hand, what you're going to get in the national title game now is Washington with absolutely no running game.
Yes.
And it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be an NFL blitz offense.
They don't have another run. They have a couple running backs, but they don't really do anything. And so it's going to be those 4 receivers and their tight end that you see a lot of.
Can Bucky Irving just transfer something for
one game?
I think we should establish a loan program. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be, if we can get players on loan, Bucky Irving and his drifting Schwervy running style would be beautiful with that offensive line. On the final play of the game, I do want to say that we were right about something, which is that the Washington defense continues to be the Muppet Band, because they let Texas get all the way down to the Washington 13-yard line with about 10 seconds left. And the Washington defense, after letting them all the way down there, was like, oh, Kermit, sorry, man.
Oh, the drive before that was that way too, where it was sort of like, well, Texas has to score twice here, and they did enough to force them to kick a field goal because that was strategically wise. But man,
Elijah Johnson made that last play, and nobody was more surprised than a Washington fan. Him running up the field, and even his coach is like, "Do you know what you just did?" Yeah, I don't think he did.
Right?
No,
right.
He defended the fade perfectly against AD Mitchell, who is a better player than him, who was an outstanding wide receiver who had already caught that same pattern for a TD earlier in the game, and he swatted it away like it was someone else's hand on the end of his arm.
Washington's defense is basically any comic book movie, any DC comic book movie where they're like, yeah, Superman exists, but we can't just have him the whole time. He can only come in to save the day once. We gotta make the regular dudes just fucking struggle for 2 hours first, and then Superman can save the day. That's fine.
It's like the first half of every Washington game is like, as you know, Superman is detained.
Superman has kryptonite diarrhea right now, and so he can't be here.
Of course, Kirk Herbstreit, as you know, Superman is dealing with the problems.
Superman's phone has been deactivated, so we can't reach him. Oh, look, here comes Superman on fourth and goal.
Oh, shit, Superman's off break.
Michael Penix watch these close games from the sideline, right? It's a team where they want to close the game with the offense on the field, and Michael Penix being Superman is like, Clark Kent, I'm going to go throw up in the bathroom now.
I'm going to go in this phone booth and wish for death.
I can't even look at these people.
Where he's like, the victory. It's like the end of that one Spider-Man movie where the regular New Yorkers win it by throwing garbage. That's Washington. Spider-Man did everything he could. Now y'all throw some shit.
We're New York, the most Ole Miss city in the world.
That's my secret. I'm occasionally mad in a timely fashion. It's that's Washington defense Hulk, right? When do you show up? Only at the last minute. And only when I'm needed. They are the Muppet emergency band, right?
I'm sorry, Kermit. Here's a turnover.
This entire Washington team reminds me of Spencer playing craps, where you're sitting at the table and they're just kind of there's no strategy. You're just spraying, and then people are like, "But he keeps winning. Does he actually know what he's doing here?" At this point, Washington has an MO, and they're all afraid of winning these close games, and it's a terrifying experience. But they keep winning, and so it's like, this isn't luck anymore, is it?
No. This is who they are, and if we get into this game next week, and it's Washington versus Michigan, and Washington is leading by 21 with 9 minutes to go, the final score is going to be one team by 4 points or another. Mm-hmm. It's not going to end like that.
On a certain level, and don't take this the wrong way and run with it, it reminds me a bit of last year's title game in that we have one team that's they're going to do one thing and they're going to do it really well. Then we have another team that every single fucking week, I don't know how in the world they win, but they did, right? That's what we saw out of TCU last year. There are differences, and there are reasons to believe in Washington that we didn't quite have with TCU last year. Better quarterback, for instance. It's just interesting that we're getting a version of that game, but we're also getting one that where I could see the wacky ball nonsense team coming out with the win.
This game's going to make Jim Harbaugh extremely mad no matter what happens. It's one of those games where he plays football by a set of rules and is very old school football. And then Kalen DeBoer is just going to draw outside the lines, and it's going to make him so mad for the entire game.
This is a matchup of two coaches who are polar opposites in terms of presented MO and actual MO. Jim Harbaugh coming up hey, how you guys doing? You're like, oh, that guy's insane. He probably throws the ball all over the place and calls double reverses in key situations. And then on the other side, there's Kalen DeBoer. He's like, hello, everyone. Hi, I'm Kalen DeBoer. And you're like, oh, what a sober mind. And then you watch his offenses and you go, Jesus Christ.
It's not a perfect match, but to me, it feels like a lot of what Michigan has had to deal with over the last couple of years with Ohio State, where you're like, okay, we have multiple NFL receivers we have to account for. And the other difference here is going to be Michael Penix is better than what Ohio State had at quarterback. CJ Stroud is almost probably always. CJ Stroud is maybe a closer comparison for sure. The offensive line, I don't know. Like, Ohio State's offensive line was kind of all over the place at points this season, and Washington's was kind of all over the place in this game in good and bad ways. But there is maybe there is a comfort to that of, like, we know what it is to prep for that game. We know what it is to prep for. This is a team where we have extremely dangerous weapons that we have to account for on this side of the ball, and we know what we have to do. So you already have some, like, muscle memory and some strategy built in for, like, well, this is how we handle that attack. That doesn't mean it will work, but it's not a completely new problem, at least.
For Washington, you have, well, we beat Dan Lanning all the time, and we just... We just withstood Texas's various fat guys. So, like, there's a little bit of familiarity for both sides.
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
They're like, we are fat guy conditioned in a number of ways. I know how Harbaugh is going to open the game, by the way, when he's on the mic. He's going to be like, hey, first, I just wanted to wish everybody a happy Golden Globes Day. That was last night. I'm glad you all made it. Congratulations to Killers of the Flower Moon. Because remember, the first thing Jim Harbaugh has to do is tell everyone Happy New Year or address whatever holiday had just happened. Because he did that twice.
Well, the other thing Washington, I would say, that has going for them is that going into the Rose Bowl, one of the questions was sort of like, is Bama going to be able to hit these big pass plays that Jalen Milroe has excelled at in the back half of the year? A lot of those big pass plays are not necessarily like, it's first and 10 and this is the thing we're trying to do. It's much more like the Auburn 4th and 31 is, you know, the most extreme example of it, but it's much more, oh God, we have to hit something now, we're in trouble. They didn't do any of that against Michigan. And I think that's partially because, like, they weren't particularly eager to make that happen. But Washington not only can do that, they want to. Like, Washington is going to want to come out and try to push the ball vertically as often as they can reasonably get away with. Like, I think there will be an aggression to Washington on offense that was just probably never going to be there. Like, yeah, I don't think Tommy Rees is great, and
I don't think Milroe has
limitations, but...
I mean, I think you're right, but I don't think that degree of aggression exists anywhere. Like, I think this is unique. Sure. I think this is, like, this is 2019 LSU unique in terms of the level of pressure that you're going to face off them. And I think that's something that, like, we talk a lot about...
I mean, Texas is the other team that kind of likes to do this, and Texas did that a fair bit, too. It takes a little bit of a different form, but yeah, you're right. Washington
they did,
is
but like,
one of
like,
one in some ways.
Like, I think we've underestimated the extremity of this, because I think people, for one reason or another, have them confused for an offensive first team with a sieve of a defense a la any air raid team that manages to get to 9 or 10 wins. And I think it is fundamentally different than that. I think, you know, we talk a lot about complementary football in this, like, glowing way for low scoring offenses with piss poor strategy and no talent development and outstanding defenses. Like, it's not a bad thing. Like, it's not a millstone you wear around your neck and a cheat code in order to go ahead.
Hey, look, that's insensitive to the slaves of Pompeii.
Right. I'm sorry. The complex and nuanced lives of the slaves of Pompeii, Ryan. But that's not what this, like, we don't talk about complementary football the other way, which is this, that you have a defense that has learned to play opportunistic, timely football in concordance with this offense that is just, like, nuke intense, railgun accurate, capable of dismantling defenses in ways that I don't think are unique to this year, but are unique to this era. I think that they are like a 4 to 5 year unique once in a wave kind of team in terms of the depth of the threats that they present. Not just like last night, by the way, they trotted out their tight end who's not really a consistent part of that pass offense. Last night they were like, oh, he's a problem too. Like,
here's 9 targets for this dude.
Here's 9 targets for this dude. I know you didn't game plan for, and he was open.
Yeah.
He was a bucket. He was a problem. Like, that's different, man. You are fucking different when you can do that. And like, I think that's where they're at.
The one part of the strength of schedule thing that Jason mentioned is interesting. I don't know if it means anything. I'm not smart. I have a hard, like, who is the best quarterback that Michigan faced before the national championship game, who is like the scariest quarterback that they face purely from a puts the ball where it needs to be throwing perspective.
Yeah.
It's not a good list. It's just not a good list.
Tagovailoa, I guess.
Maybe. Yes.
That's what they'll say. Like, and I think they will say that this week. They'll go, oh, Talia Tagovailoa is the
like guy that we really. That to me is the biggest distinction between the TCU comparison to last year. Is like Max Duggan had a really fun last year, got to be a Heisman finalist, but at no point was it like, oh man, the fucking sharpshooter is here. Like, look out. Go ahead.
It's a combination of Michael Penix and the wide receivers serious. Like, there's probably four serious pro talents that he has to throw to, and it becomes like playing 7-on-7.
And he can
put it
on them in the perfect, like, he can get them the ball. They don't have to make these, like, crazy acrobatic throws, like catches, rather. He can just put the ball where it needs to be. And in situations where, like, a lot of those completions, Texas was in good coverage. You didn't look at it and say, like, no. Oh, man, you know, it's
dude,
like
that. There's this one ball to Odunze that I actually like just yelled out fuck when it landed. Mm-hmm. And it is positioned over the shoulder in the hands, directly over the outstretched hand of a perfectly positioned DB. And it did not matter. Honestly, the dude who was guarding Odunze last night didn't do a bad job. I really don't think he did. That was the job that he had, and I think that's about as well as you can do as a relatively normal high-level college football talent. Also, shouts out to him for finally deciding to just yank him down. Just PI. Just professional-grade PI. I think when they look at that game tape and they go, how did you develop? How did you mature during this game? He can be like, do you see this part where I just yanked his ass? Here, that's
oh, yeah, exactly. He's getting a plus grade for that play. Coaches, yep, plus.
Coach is
on.
Like, check, love it, great.
Situational awareness.
Yeah, you get a passing grade for your coverage of Rome Odunze, where he absolutely fried you, because that's what he does to mortals in the year 2023-2024. I think the closest comparison that Michigan has faced are the good Ohio State teams that they have faced with actual credible passing threats, and I think it's very capable of that secondary to go ahead and hang in those games and still get pressure. So
sure.
Like, I think we're at another coin flip. Like, I looked at both of these games coming in, and they both felt like coin flips in different ways. One of them was in Alabama and Michigan's case, one where you go, I see either team winning by a point or a score. And then in Texas and Washington's, which I was incorrect about, I thought, well, one team might lose by 30 or the other team might lose by 30. It just felt like that kind of game. I have no clue what's going to happen to this, but I would default to Jason's line of thinking that, well, the team that's managed to handle everything that's been thrown at them, right, in various ways over the past 3 months might continue to be the better team because...
Isn't that both of them, though?
Technically.
Like, in a weird way, isn't that both of them? It's just different in what it's manifesting.
One of them very much and one of them barely.
How about this? I don't know if it's math. I don't know if it's mathematically true, but it has definitely been narratively the case for both of them.
Yeah.
We've gone on this season.
If I bet on death and taxes football, though, and death and taxes football is is the and exclude the last game's results because they are devastating to my case. Punt, kick, defense, sorrow. Like, if we bet on all four of those and the run game, right? If we bet on all four of those and gravity to kick in, then obviously the clear bet is Michigan there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
I guess I look at the four primary units in this game. I think you have the country's best offense and the country's best defense. On the other side of the ball, I think Michigan has a clear advantage. Michigan's offense against Washington's defense. Doesn't mean Washington's defense is bad. It's not fraudulent. It's, you know, it's it does what it has to. But yeah, I feel like Michigan, they're going to want to hold the ball a lot, and they're probably going to be able to.
And it might not matter because I can see a way Washington's like,
Washington might score every 10 seconds.
I see Washington just blasting their way out of that. Like, it's an awesome game. This is not my way of saying, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't, but like, I don't really care. I think the outcome either way could be absolutely fascinating. And also,
best approach to take to all of this, though. That's kind of what we're trying to steer everybody towards, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah. Also, I think
not to try and put a bow on this.
Yeah. But your first quarter results, like if Michigan comes out and suplexes Washington for the first quarter, I will tell you, I don't think that means anything.
Right. Right.
No, not if they can make up 4 touchdowns in right.
Because no. This is the view. Washington is not fucking scared of anything. No, yeah. We know that.
They tried to fight the Texas fans after the game. Like, they were up in the stands. They wanted to fight everyone. They were done with the team and were like, let's get some fans.
I'm really glad you said this because last night we were. I can't remember exactly. Spencer, I think it was you. I can't remember exactly how you put it yesterday, but Kalen DeBoer is. It's not just that he doesn't rattle. But you know, at the end of, you remember at the end of Fellowship of the Rings when Sean Bean is fighting the Uruk-hai and that one Uruk-hai is on the sword, he just kind of walks forward onto the sword.
Yeah.
And just like doesn't break eye contact. Like I can't quite come up with another term for it. Like he is not afraid to get, well, where other coaches I think would get skittish or get conservative, he somehow has a way of getting more aggressive, but not in a reckless way.
The math is totally different.
Yeah,
that's the thing. The math is totally different.
Like he does not seem to operate on the same mental calculus that a lot of coaches in his level do when they are exasperating us in these situations.
Yeah. I don't.
Am I calling him a video game coach?
I don't mean this as a diss. The way I interpret that is more like things can be going poorly for Washington. And his
response can be to pour on fuel.
Well, Washington doesn't let that stifle their creativity. Yeah, I think it's mostly, it doesn't feel like Washington gets into a place where they say, we have ideas, but we're scared to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
they're not always
ideas I like. They're not always ideas that feel smart, but I think there is a confidence of, like, we have ingenuity and we will, like, why don't we try this? Mm-hmm. Honestly, what sticks out the most to me is the fourth down conversion in the Apple Cup, which was a crazy fucking play to call, but was also an incredibly smart play to call.
Dude, the two plays, but like on that red zone possession before.
Let the Apple Cup expert speak.
Yeah, sorry.
That fourth and one play also came after a chess mess of timeouts where they took a time. Wazoo took a timeout. UW took a timeout. Everyone's like, okay, they'll punt. They won't punt, whatever.
Yeah.
And then they break out a reverse, like crash the front of the line, break out a reverse, and everyone's going, what the hell? Like the conviction it took to not punt there and then be like, okay, we're going to go do this. It's Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer don't really take downside into their like risk equation.
Right. Yeah.
They're just like, oh man, this could be good. And they don't even think about what the downside could
conviction
be. It's just like, there's only upside.
Conviction is maybe the best word for this because it's not stubbornness. I mean, it's a kind of stubbornness, but not a mule-headed kind of stubbornness. It's like they have this they're so serene in their like certainty of principle, like in their convictions of their that what they're doing and the way they're going about this game is the correct way. And it's like nothing that could happen, no outside factor, I feel like, after watching this, and we've been watching this team for a couple seasons now, and they've been fascinating, but it's like, I can't at this point, it's hard to imagine a scenario where any outside factor could change their game plan or their ethos or something. And
I think I think injury is the only one, which is what concerns me about the Dylan Johnson thing.
Well, that's outside factor by like something the other team's done to them. Like that would be an inside factor, right?
Yeah.
When I think,
I still don't feel like I've got this exactly right, but conviction is close.
Well, I just let's have our ideal be Dan Campbell going for two from the 7-yard line.
Yes,
that is the level of conviction to which we should all strive.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Amanda Ball who said she like went to go brush her teeth after Washington recovered the onside kick. It was then came back and was like, what's happening now?
So with a minute 6 left when Washington got the ball, I was like, dog, I gotta be up in 4 fucking hours to edit a recap of this game. I'll catch you on the other side. I open the recap. I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about? Texas almost won. Yeah. He's like, Chris Branch, what are you, you're making stuff up. Let me look at the play log.
I think prefer to stay generally enthusiastic and positive and don't really enjoy sort of nitpicking at the little things. Hi, Steve Sarkeesian. I'm going to nitpick at the little things.
Hi, offensive offensive whiz kid.
Yeah, offensive whiz kid, Steve Sarkeesian. Or
let's give Texas credit as a weirdness enabler. They've had some weird-ass games as well.
They've had some very weird-ass games.
This is the most fun I've had with Texas football in a generation.
When you are playing Washington and you get in there and you go, okay, hey, we're going to – it's 4th and 4 at the Washington 7. It's 4th and 4. We're going to go ahead and kick the field goal and go for the onside. What about that to you is more probable or is less probable than picking up or the onside kick? Because the onside kick, like, I would think with Quinn Ewers.
But why does it matter? Like, they did, they weren't in a position where kicking it away was going to, like, they were in a timeout position where they were going to have to onside it no matter what. I get what you're saying, but I mean, like it's just a matter of, I'd rather have.
To me, that and not going for two. After you scored late and they're like everything that Steve Sarkeesian did, I think checks out, but in aggregate,
a coach that you can accuse. He's not a coach that you can ever accuse of not thinking things through. Right.
Right.
Like, this is never going to be a Bielema situation.
But in aggregate, you just kind of go, I don't know. Some of these feel
can I give you a test case?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit dated. Does it remind you at all of the times when Jeff Tedford in his first Cal administration would, for lack of a better word, out-genius himself?
A little bit.
Kind of?
Yeah, like there's a second down call where he calls this little swing pass that effectually is just like a waste of a play. Mm. He's like, oh, we'll just see what the running back can get. Oh, turns out he's totally covered, and he got out of bounds. Like, it's just little things there where you go, I understand you were working from behind and with the deck stacked against you. It just seems to be in aggregate, like maybe making a few other sort of reckless, like outright reckless calls. You might want to look into it because at times it felt like
risk. You're going to get a little cowboy.
I think we are overlooking that. It's so much easier to do that when you have Michael Penn. Like Quinn Ewers played well.
Yeah.
And I think Quinn Ewers has been like fine this season. And I'm really interested to see
what has to be a fucking weird.
Just
a weird vibe, locker room, fan base, booster core situation.
I am interested to see if he does in fact come back, which it sounds like he's going to. Like, I'm interested to see what that looks like going forward. But like, there is a real advantage to like, we can be weird and aggressive because we have Michael Penix, because we have somebody who is like so good at the specific weird aggressive thing that we're trying to do. And like other teams do try this, and it looks fucking stupid. Because they don't have a quarterback who can do it.
You're running around holding a blue shell, fundamentally. Yeah.
We were so close to getting Arch Manning in last night in a peak situation. We were so close to getting him in because yours took a hard hit and they were looking at him on the sidelines for a minute and Arch Manning had his helmet on. And I was thinking, do you want to end this young man's career right here? Because that would putting Arch Manning in a clutch situation. I was like, file the transfer papers. That's not fair to ask any quarterback at that point in their career to do. It's not like consider how insane it was for Nick Saban to switch at halftime.
Yeah.
Right. To switch quarterbacks. Right. Which now I'm sensing you're like, oh, that's Tua Tagovailoa. Of course you should have done that.
Yeah,
no, that was fucking insane.
Right. And especially when you're talking about like, because Malik Murphy
I'm
went
not
into
even
the
sure
portal.
Nick knew that at the time.
Because Malik Murphy went into the portal. You're not even talking about like, we're putting in the backup. We're putting in the third stringer. He just happens to be the backup now.
Had his helmet on, and I was like, oh, we're about to get real nude. Like,
if the funniest outcome there, though, is he comes in and rips a touchdown.
Rips it, absolute bro.
It's like, boom.
Yes, that's correct.
Today would have been, I don't want to sit here and be like, oh, I'm glad this kid didn't get his moment, but oh, God, today would have been a lot less fun, and it would not have been his fault at all.
I want us all to pause for a moment and think about how ungovernable Jim Harbaugh is going to be if he wins a national championship in the year where he was suspended by two different groups for two different issues.
He's made so many fucking burgers.
I'm going to be so mad if he takes an NFL job after this. I mean, I know he wants to, but I'm going to be so mad if he gets one after he wins a halftime national championship.
You will not be able to tell this man a goddamn thing. And that is...
No, what a new is... and exciting frontier that will be.
Well, also,
and Jim Harbaugh, who thinks he knows best.
You know how insane he'll become if he reaches the pinnacle of college football while his less insane brother wins the Super Bowl?
Oh, wow. God.
Because it still won't be enough, brother.
Oh, God. And it'll
right,
happen.
Yeah.
And it
right, you are still the second-ranked boy.
It's cool. A month apart, too. It happens with just enough time for you to bat.
Oh, cool. Hey, Mom, Jim won JV. That's pretty cool. Did you get, like, a certificate for that? Here's my second Super Bowl ring. Do you remember the first one?
You ever notice how your trophy looks like a vape pen? That's cool. Anyway.
So it's like book it or something?
He's going to show up to Easter and put a fork in John's hand at the table.
John's not even going to say anything.
Yeah.
He's going to open his mouth and it's going to be to say, hey, Jim, would you pass the salad? And Jim's just going to slam a fork directly through the back of his hand.
The worst possible iteration of this is if the Ravens beat the 49ers again in the Super Bowl, and he's going to be like, that's a pretty good program. They got up there in San Francisco. You should see if they got any open assistant positions.
Yeah, they're really building a good foundation over there in San Francisco. I think they got not a lot of history there. But
a lot of locker room culture you can learn from.
You know, we beat them in one of these games a few years ago. They're better now, though.
Quarterback play is mostly where I would say they excel.
There's always Tom. That's what Tom's for.
Tom Green's just like, please, can we play Yahtzee for the love of God?
Or does Tom on the other side take advantage of the tumult to put a knife in John's ribs?
He'll fumble that shit. He'll put it in handle first.
Stab himself.
I know that, like,
I got lost in my huge pants. I can't find the knife.
He cuts himself trying to unsheathe his butterfly knife without taking it out of his pocket. Tom Crean, butterflyknife.biz.
Just imagine being behind Tom Crean at TSA when he goes through the metal detector. You're like, we're not finding shit in those pants. It's going to take days. We need a search team to go through those pleats.
Sir, can you remove the sweater? Remove the sweater from your pants, please.
They set up like the arrival bubble. And it's just a pants pocket.
Just strapping up in PPE with a headlamp.
Amy Adams staring up and putting one.
Amy Adams is diagramming like 2-3 zone and inbound plays.
Can I tell you, I know that you, like me, spend time reading Tom Crean's Wikipedia entry. And this is a selection from his extremely overwrought coaching style and philosophy section. On the court, Crean is known to walk the sidelines with an intensity normally reserved for football coaches.
I agree.
Who wrote that? Go find the name of the person who did that.
I bet it was Jim Harbaugh.
I bet it was.
I'll write your Wikipedia entry, buddy.
Big Jim, 413.
He says he's an expert at coaching, and I don't know.
He's like a dog that thinks he's people.
There's a citation for this, and it's Les Carpenter.
In case you want, by the way, more, the next sentence is, for inspiration, Crean has a library filled with biographies of coaches and business executives. This is official that Tom Crean has the worst fucking library in the world.
Tom Crean, sentient airport bookstore.
That's it. The man built a Hudson News in his house. Tom Crean's like, you know what I'm craving? Some inspiration and a $5 bag of wasabi peas.
How come Tom Crean always gets me an $8 Powerade for my birthday?
Tom Crean eating wasabi peas?
No.
Yeah.
Regular peas, please.
That's why he's so worked up on the sideline.
Whoa!
He's
opening a can of spring peas.
Yeah.
On the sideline.
Wait. Read the last sentence of his coaching philosophy where Indiana just strikes off.
Yeah. During his time at Indiana, Crean was criticized by fans of the local sports media for the amount of turnovers his teams committed. Cited. Poor defense. Also cited. Lack of team fundamentals. No citation. Poor in-state recruiting. Citation. Large numbers of players transferring. Cited. Noted. And his quote, blow by, unquote, handshakes of opposing coaches. There is three pages of stuff that Jim Harbaugh wrote, and then there's one page here that Kyle at Crimson Quarry.
I was going to say, are all these links Crimson Quarry?
The 95 Theses of Tom Crean sucks.
Someone on Wikipedia saw this ocean of bullshit, put on the scuba gear, and was like, I'm diving in and fixing this, buddy.